This is Katie Dunleavy with My Chronic Illness and Me. As someone who's struggled with chronic illness for more than 15 years, I've often felt incredibly isolated in my journey. Now, as a coach for others dealing with chronic illness, I've realized I'm not alone in feeling that way. There just aren't a lot of forums out there where people can connect about their experiences with chronic illness. So this is that space, a place where we can educate each other about different illnesses, dispel myths, and most importantly, share our stories. Let's dive in. Hey everyone, March is Endometriosis Awareness Month, so this month actually both of my episodes will feature people dealing with endometriosis. If you or if someone you know struggles with endo and want to reach out, please don't hesitate to email me at katie@reviveandthrivecoach.com. I'm always here to talk. Today I'm talking to Maggie, who is a teacher's assistant for pre-K kiddos. She lives in Georgia with her husband and dog, and she has had 4 endometriosis surgeries over the course of about 10 years. Here's her story. I hope you enjoy. Hi, Maggie. Thanks so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm so excited too. We were just talking about how you're the cousin-in-law of one of my clients.
Yes. I love her so much. And as hard as it is, I know, to have a chronic illness, it's really nice to have that companionship with somebody, that person that you can kind of confide in or somebody that understands you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting and special for me to get to meet new people through people who I've been working with and who I've talked to. So it's really great to meet you.
Yeah, it's very nice to meet you too.
Okay, so usually I like to start out, as you know from hearing some of the episodes, just asking people to tell me a little bit about themselves. I'd love to hear more about you.
Okay. Well, yeah, I grew up here in the North Georgia Mountains. It's a beautiful area. I've been married to my husband. We just celebrated our 10-year anniversary in October.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, he's been my rock through everything. And we have our pride and joy, our dog, Winnie. I'm a school teacher's assistant for pre-K. So I'm with 4-year-olds all day long. And so,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's a lot, but
you must have to have so much energy throughout the day.
You would think.
Yeah. What's it like working with so many kids every day?
It's a lot. I mean, really, it's a lot. It's fun. I mean, because you get to be a kid yourself. I mean, you get on their level and I mean, you play all day. Educationally play, and it's fun. It is fun, but it's exhausting. Coming home is nice.
I have 2 nephews that are they're around the same age. One is like a little bit over 1 and one is almost 2. And I also like love spending time with them. It's like my favorite thing in the whole world. And afterwards, I'm so tired. I can't imagine doing that day in and day out for your job.
It is. It's exhausting, but it is rewarding.
You mentioned you grew up pretty close to where you guys live now.
Yes, I do. My parents live about 15 minutes from us. And so I do get to see them. Some of my sisters and brothers live here too as well. So it is nice to get to be close to them and to see them more frequently than others that don't live anywhere near here. So a good support system.
Yeah. It sounds like you have a pretty big family. How many siblings do you have?
I do. I'm the oldest of 9.
9. Wow.
Yeah, my mom and dad are amazing. And yeah, they've done a really good job raising all of us. And we're all very close. And, you know, we have our moments, but yeah, we're all really close. And
that's really sweet. My dad is 1 of 10.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
But, you know, he's a generation above us.
Yes.
I always think that my family's big. I'm 1 of 4, but 9. My goodness. So what's the gap between the oldest and the youngest?
I was 18 years old when he was born.
Wow, 18 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So my mom was in her early 40s when she had him. So it gives me hope.
Is that something that you and your husband are interested in yourselves, having a family?
Yes. So I'm 38 and we have been trying to have a family for years.
Uh-huh.
So endometriosis has gotten in our way.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that. If you're comfortable, I'd love to hear more about that.
Oh, of course. So yeah, I've basically had it most of my life, the majority of my life. I remember symptoms being very early. I was very young, but I wasn't diagnosed until I was 33. not that long ago. I was finally diagnosed, and yeah, it's been a struggle. It's been a lot to handle. But like I've said, my husband has been there through all of it for me. I mean, even when we were dating, he was very supportive and understood that he didn't understand, but he was there for me through a lot of it. So yeah.
I feel like one of the most important things for someone in your really close circle or support system to understand is that they don't understand.
Yes.
Right? Like you want them to be sympathetic and empathetic, but like know that they will never actually quite get it. You mentioned that your symptoms started really young. What did that look like for you?
Mm-hmm. It was well before, I mean, even I was hitting puberty that I remember being in a lot of pain and thinking that like, maybe I just had to go to the bathroom or why does my stomach hurt so bad? And no one in my family had endometriosis and no one even really knew what that was. I mean, we still really don't know what it is, but, or a lot of people don't, but yeah, I mean, I was probably 13.
Wow.
When I first knew that I didn't feel good. And then of course, later on and in high school, being in a locker room with girls and them talking about their periods and things like that. And you know, saying that theirs lasted 3 days and I'm going, wait, what? It's not supposed to be an 8 to 9 day thing.
Yeah.
That blew me away. So I kind of knew early on that I wasn't like everybody else when it came to that. And it just kind of got worse from there.
Mm.
But I was very young, I think.
Yeah. I mean, 13 is very young.
Yeah.
That sounds really difficult, especially middle school is just so challenging anyways, and to add all of the pain on top of that.
Yeah. And I wasn't even on my period then. I mean, I was a late bloomer, but like I said, I remember having a good bit of pain early on.
Did you talk to anyone about it?
No. I kind of just thought it was normal.
Yeah.
No, I ate something, I've got stomach issues, and then even later on with my period, it's just my ovaries. Everything's working. It's kicked into high gear and I'm different than all these other women, but it's just how it is. That's life. So
there's like an element of before you know that other people don't necessarily experience the same symptoms, there's an element of like, oh, well, this is just what it's supposed to be. Right?
Exactly.
And there's like, how do you know that that's not what it's supposed to be?
I mean, really? I mean, yeah, you don't, especially that early and even in high school back then. I had no clue.
Yeah.
I didn't know that that wasn't normal.
Right.
I didn't know that wasn't normal in my 30s.
Right. Yeah. Well, and then even when you sort of find out like, oh, well, other people's, I guess they have periods that last 3 days. And I guess I'm just different, right? Like there's no sort of, it's very hard, I feel like, to take that extra step to be like, wait, no, I think something's actually like wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I had done, of course, I would Google everything. Of course, everything says you have cancer, but I wanted to find out not necessarily what I had, but like other people experiencing this. If I put this into Google, am I going to find anything? And I mean, I could have guessed I had endometriosis. By the time I was diagnosed, I was like, you think? I know I do. I mean, that was not a shock to me when I was finally diagnosed. It did not come as a shock to me.
How early do you feel like you were like, oh, this is probably what it is?
At least my late 20s.
Wow.
Yeah. I had a coworker who had kind of experienced the same thing, and a doctor had not done surgery, but had said, you probably have endometriosis. And I thought, well, that's probably what I have.
Mm.
And then I did research on it and have a couple of books, and I thought, this is exactly what I have.
What was that 10 years like? Like,
I mean, really, I was as a kid, I just kind of went with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, it's not that I didn't want to know. I just assumed that that was how it was going to be and I had to deal with it.
Mm.
So it wasn't until later on that I really started looking into it and wondering if I could get help. But otherwise, I just kind of went with the flow and dealt with the pain and dealt with everything. And I thought that that was just how my life was going to be. Everything was planned around that part of my cycle, including my wedding. So I just kind of Brendan Baird it. Like,
yeah. It sounds like basically for 1 week out of every month, you just were like completely out of commission.
Yeah, I was, but I still pushed through. I mean, it was, I didn't miss work for it. I just did it. I mean, I had to keep going through life. And like I said, I thought it was normal for the longest time. And yeah, I didn't stop.
Yeah. I think that's also something that is hard for people who don't experience chronic pain or a chronic illness to understand too. Like, well, what do you mean? Like you're still at work. You still look fine. You still look put together. You are contributing to meetings or you're doing great with the kids that you're watching or whatever.
Yes.
And there's this element of like, it's so hard to explain. You just have to, because if you're in pain every day or every day for one entire week a month or whatever it is for that person, you at some point kind of just have to keep living your life. And so you just keep going through the pain.
Exactly. To me, there was nothing I could do about it at that time. So I just, yeah, that would have been a lot of work missed. That would have been a lot of dates not taken with my husband. That would have been missed concerts and fun things that I didn't want to miss.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you push through and you deal with it. And from the outside, you know, people think, well, you're not sick. Mm-hmm. If you're able to do this, then you're not hurting. And they have no idea.
Yeah. Well, and I think also it's very normal. I don't know, from my own experience and from people I've talked to as like a younger woman to just sort of think like, oh, okay, well, this is what I have to deal with. So I have to deal with it. I just have to keep going. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you. I'm curious to hear, but like for myself, I know that there was a big adjustment period of like, okay, I actually can't do that. Like I can't keep doing that. And yeah. having to recalibrate, like mm-hmm. if I'm in pain every day, then I need to stop just pushing through it and yes. figure something else out.
Yes.
How did that? Yeah.
I think my final breaking point, what my OBGYN kept putting me on, oh, you're in pain. You know, here's a hormonal birth control. Let's just keep changing it up until we find something that fits. And I finally mm-hmm. just kind of broke down in their office one day and was like, this isn't working. I don't feel good. I really don't feel good. I'm hurting. I'm in pain. This is miserable. And this was when I was 33.
Like it took a long time for you to get to that point.
A very long time. A very long time. She finally did an ultrasound on me and thought, wow, you've got some very large uterine fibroids, some very large ovarian cysts on both ovaries. Let's see if we can put you on this birth control and see if it does anything in 2 weeks. Well, obviously it didn't. And then that's when she went in. She couldn't even remove the cysts. So she just drained them. And that was it. I mean, diagnosed me with endometriosis and sent me on. And I think it was just kind of like, it took me that long just to get to that point, but I wasn't satisfied. I was still going to push through my life because I still felt like I had to, but I wasn't going to stop. Now knowing that I had an answer, I wasn't going to stop from there. Like I was just going to push even harder.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like once you glimpse a little bit of relief, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, great. But I mm-hmm. need more than that. Like, what can I do to make it better?
Yes.
Because, you know, while I'm sure draining your cysts was helpful in some way, that has nothing to do with actually excising endometriosis. It has nothing to do with how the disease was impacting your organs and all of the stuff that comes with that.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, and this is a doctor, so you listen to them. And I didn't have the answers I felt that I needed, but she sent me on to have a surgery to remove the fibroids and the endometriosis and then actually remove the cysts. I ended up having to have an open myomectomy, which you know, they actually had to basically do a C-section on me for fibroids, for the tumors. And that pushed me even more because at that point, they're telling me, if you don't get pregnant now, it's never going to happen. You know, you need to heal from this surgery. My age, and the doctor actually said to me too, I put a good down payment on your body. You need to utilize it now while you can.
Wow.
And let's get this ball rolling. And of course, still couldn't get pregnant. And they did another ablation. These are all ablations, by the way. Oh, these are all, they're not excisions. They're all ablations. And so basically every ablation I had, every surgery I had was just creating more scar tissue. I was in more pain than I was even before my first surgery.
Oh my God.
And so it just kind of snowballed. But I still didn't stop.
How many surgeries did you have?
I have had a total of 4. I just had my excision surgery in May of last year.
Wow. Well, congratulations on finally getting an excision.
I know. I'm so excited.
I want to hear more about that, but I can't, but wow, 4. So yes, 3 of those were ablations.
Yes.
And one was, I didn't even know that they did like an open you up mm-hmm. from like, usually I've only ever heard of ablation or excision being done through laparoscopy. Tell me more about that.
About the myomectomy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically I have to have that done because the fibroid tumors were too big to remove otherwise. So they had to completely cut me open, just like a C-section.
Jeez.
And remove tumors that were about the size, they're a little bit bigger than my fist. I had about 3 that were that big, and wow. I had a bunch of little ones too.
Wow. Okay, so fibroids and endo, it's not just one or
yes.
the other, it's both
Correct.
That you're dealing
Correct.
With. Yeah.
Yes.
Yikes. Did they do anything with the endo at that point for that first surgery?
He did an ablation on anything that he found at the time.
Not
Very
really.
Little. Yeah.
Yeah.
It came back 6 months later.
And then what was your next one like?
About a year later, I had some pains again. And by the way, the doctor doing my surgery was a fertility specialist.
Okay.
And he was a very good surgeon. He is a very good surgeon. And did just an ablation, just went in and kind of said he cleaned everything up, waited another 6 months, and still we still were not getting pregnant. And he basically told me that there was nothing he could do, that endometriosis is there, it's going to stay, he can't keep doing surgeries on me. And that's when my husband and I both were like, this can't be it. There's no way. Even doing IVF, that doesn't fix my problem.
Right.
Like that's just a band-aid for my problem.
Right.
And it took a lot of research to even find, like, I had no idea excision existed at this point.
Wow. Is this the doctor that told you he put a down payment on your body?
Yes.
Yeah. Yikes. So yeah, it's funny. I just released an episode last week about like misconceptions and myths and whatever around endo, and just the like, wow, the yeah. number of doctors who just still to this day, I mean, this is like what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we're talking about?
Yes.
Still just don't know what they're talking about. It's really upsetting.
It is. It's sad. And I understand that it might not be your specialty or you don't know much about it, but I think what bothers my husband and I the most is that at no point were we referred to anybody who might know. I mean, you know, we have an entire center of endometriosis care in Atlanta, but that was never...
Hey, you're right there.
...brought up to me. Yes. I mean, it was never, hey, research this or look into this. This is not my forte. Let's refer you somewhere. I think that's what bothered me the most is that I had to, after my third surgery, had to completely start over, basically.
Wow.
And that was stressful.
That's so stressful, especially if A, you've been in pain for 20 years, and
yes.
B, you're trying to have a family, and mm-hmm. you know, you've been trying to figure it out actively through surgery for
yes.
several years.
Yes.
It's so frustrating to just sort of go to someone who you think is going to help you and mm-hmm. then basically be told like, well, sorry.
Yeah, there's
okay,
nothing we can
give
do.
Give me another resource. Tell me what to do. Like, if you can't help me, help me figure out who can help me. There's so little of that in the medical field around, I mean, I think in general, honestly, but around this particular disease, especially.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, like I said, I understand that you might not know, but I would appreciate a referral, or I would appreciate anything. Just don't pretend like, you know, you can help me and then throw your hands up in the air and tell me that you can't. I mean, that was very heartbreaking and very discouraging.
Yeah. I went to, after my first surgery, I went to a pelvic floor therapist who, it was a really bad experience, actually. She didn't really understand. She was used to doing it on people who had given birth, which is a very different circumstance.
Very different.
And, you know, so she didn't really know that at the beginning, she shouldn't be doing like internal work on me. And it really set me back. Like it sent me into this huge pain spike for months and months and months. And I mean, I appreciate that at some point she was just like, you know what, I don't think I can help you anymore. And I prefer that to someone pretending that they can.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, at the same time, then I had to start over, to your point, just like basically start from scratch. Like, okay, how do I find someone who actually knows what they're doing for my specific issue?
Yeah, it is. It's frustrating. And I'm so sorry you had to go through that too, because it's hard enough to even find somebody to help you.
Yeah.
And then you think you found that person or that doctor or that PA or whomever it may be. And you still find out that you might get a little bit of help, but it's not going to fix you.
Yeah. And you put in all this time and effort and money and emotional.
Yes. Money.
Investment. I mean, everything
yes.
into hoping that this person can help you. And then, yeah, it's really devastating when
it is.
That person can't help you.
It is. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned money and finances. I mean, that takes a toll as well. And insurance doesn't necessarily cover excision and a lot of fertility, dealing with infertility. I mean, that's expensive in itself. And
so expensive.
It's a lot. So on top of feeling physically ill and being mentally broken, here's a bill.
Yeah. Let's also just drain all of your savings. And,
yes.
Yeah. Cool. Sounds great. Thanks. So what did you do after this initial surgeon worked on you, had a couple surgeries with you, and then was basically like, I can't do anything. Where did you go from there? You said you felt like you had to start over.
I did. I ended up doing a lot of research, and this is one time when I think social media is a blessing. I found a lot of women and groups that were going through the same thing I was, and I would basically just start following these pages and these groups on social media. And through one particular group called the Sisterhood of the Traveling Relics, I found that you can see a NAPRO doctor or a NAPRO PA, which is they work with women on tracking your cycles and learning. They can actually help you look at your cycle and learn your cycle. And then they can kind of nitpick it and figure out maybe what is wrong with you. And of course, the first, well, let me back up. I finally found a NAPRO. She's a PA, I believe, but
what does that stand for? Naturopathic?
Yes. Basically, it's natural procreative technology is what it is. Because for me, getting pregnant naturally was what we wanted. I mean, like I said, I mean, I didn't want to go through all of this medical IVF and everything, and then my body not be able to hold a pregnancy because it's sick. I wanted to give my body the best chance at everything. And so I found this woman out of Rouse, out of Atlanta. And I had a couple of appointments with her virtually, and she taught me how to track my cycles. And within about two cycles, she met with me and told me that I needed surgery again. She could basically pick it apart and tell me that she knew, you know, with the symptoms I was giving her.
Yeah.
She said I needed surgery again and gave me a list of excision surgeons. And I was like, that wasn't that hard.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, all this time, and that was not that hard. Yeah. So it was like, it took a couple of months and I was right where I felt like I needed to be. And if it weren't for finding those women on social media that were going through the same thing I was, I never would have found any of this.
That's one of the things that honestly frustrates me the most. And it's why I started this podcast. It's part of why I'm doing what I'm doing, is because there actually is really good information out there. Like, there are really good resources that you can go to and you can trust, and you can learn the right information, and you can learn about all the different options and doctors. But it is so hard to find them.
Like, it is.
It just sounds like you're finding your Dr. Napro, who then led to an excision surgery, was kind of a fluke, like through.
Really?
And same with me, like me stumbling across a Facebook page, Nancy's Nook, that had all the information I needed, was because some random person in my life happened to mention it to me. Like,
yeah.
What if that didn't happen?
Exactly. It shouldn't be that hard. And you said that this is a reason why you have this podcast, which I think is just amazing. If you can reach just 5 women, what a job well done.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like literally anybody
I mean, it's almost like they're being hidden and they're being kept a secret, but I want everyone to know, every woman to know, every person to know that it's available. It is available.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's not that easy.
It's infuriating. It's like, I feel like if for example, endometriosis affects, I think I'm going to get this right, but someone can fact check me, that there's a stat on the Below the Belt documentary that talks about how the worldwide number of people who are affected by endometriosis is the same as the number of women who are affected by diabetes. And it's either worldwide, or it might be just in the US. Again, I'm not super sure.
Right.
But like, okay, so that's extremely common, right? Everybody knows what diabetes is. Everybody knows basically how you handle diabetes. Like, if you are just on the street and someone says, I'm having a low blood sugar moment, like, you know, as a person in the world, how you can sort of help them, right? Like, it's a very common thing. And the same number of people are affected by endo, and like, nobody knows what it is. Nobody, even your doctor who did surgery, didn't refer you to somebody else. Yeah, it's just such a disparity that really infuriates me. So you mentioned that you had your excision surgery in May of last year.
Yes, I did.
Tell me about that.
It was hard. It was hard. I got cocky.
No.
I healed very well from my last few surgeries, including the open myomectomy. I healed very well and pretty quickly from that one. So I thought, this one's going to be nothing. It's going to be a breeze. He's going to get it all. It's going to be great. And it knocked me down for a while.
Yeah.
But I had a lot done. I had the exam the day before, and he did not think I would have to. He thought I might be able to go home that day.
Well, that's normal.
After surgery. So yeah, like, I was very excited because at first he was going to hold me for 23 hours, whatever. Well, I ended up having, I was in the OR for about 7 hours. Surgery took about 7 Yikes. Hours.
Wow.
I ended up having to have a bowel resection.
No, man.
And had to have my appendix removed. So he did clear a fallopian tube, which I was told was not fixable. So he was able to completely clear that.
Meaning remove it?
No, he cleared, like, it had scar tissue built up in it.
Oh, I see.
And he completely cleaned it out. And so it's functioning, it's fine, it's perfect, it's healthy.
Nice.
And cleaned me up. And I have never felt so good in my life.
Yay! That you do now?
Yeah. It was a hard recovery. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yay.
I feel really good. A hard recovery. It took a little bit longer, but I feel really good now.
Oh, that makes me so happy. I literally can see.
I can't believe this is how you're supposed to feel.
I can see it in your face. Like, your entire face just lit up.
Thank you.
It's so nice. Tell me about, like, when you say I've never felt so good, what is that like?
Oh my gosh, to not have pains, or even those twinging pains when you're talking to somebody and it takes your breath away, and with strangers, you know, you just keep going. You're like, okay, just get over it. You know, it'll be gone in a second. I mean, to not even have that anymore, to be ovulating and to not have that pain, or especially on your period, and to not have any pain. I mean, none. I mean, to not even know that I'm about to start, or, I mean, it's just a world of a difference. I have more energy. My hormones have kind of leveled out, and it's the weird, it's almost a weird feeling.
Yeah. Cause I mean, for 28 years, yeah, you hadn't felt
that was
like
my
that.
Norm. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Congratulations. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. He did find what he believes might be some endo in my diaphragm,
mm-hmm,
but that was out of his jurisdiction. Just said to kind of keep an eye on that, and we'll go from there with a thoracic surgeon. But the fact that I have no pain is good enough for me right now. So,
yeah, that's amazing. And that's also, it's always a little tricky, at least for me, to talk to people about the post surgery phase, mm-hmm, because I actually just had a second surgery in October. And similarly, like, I think it went really well. I'm feeling really good. There's always, at least for me, there's always kind of this like, but it might come back, or like, but I might have to do this again in a couple years. Like, I always kind of want to, it's a weird impulse that I have. Like, I don't know. It's like, I almost want to just warn the people in my life, like it might get worse again. But at the same time, I also really want to celebrate and just be in the moment of feeling good. It's like a weird dichotomy. I don't know.
It really is. I mean, any little pain, even if it's just in your head, in my head, I'm like, oh my goodness, is it coming back? Is that what that is? What was that then? You know, I mean, it could be a million other things, but my mind goes to, it's endometriosis and it's come back, because it has every time. Why wouldn't it come back now?
Right.
But I just have to hope. And I'm, like you said, I'm celebrating that I feel this good.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a really fun time right now.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, right? Because, okay, so.
You do.
For any one of us with this disease specifically, it may come back. We may have to, mm-hmm, do other surgeries. We might have to go through more pain at some point. But like, if that's the case, it's only more reason to celebrate when,
absolutely,
you're not in that period, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So what are you able to do now that you are like really excited about that you hadn't been able to do before?
Well, I don't dread my cycle anymore. It just is what it is. And I don't have to grin and bear it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I just have more energy overall. And I know a lot of that is probably hormones too. Like I said, my hormones have kind of fixed themselves with a little bit of help. But I mean, I guess it was the endometriosis that was really kind of affecting my hormones. So I have more energy. I mean, even coming home from work after working, like I said, with 4-year-olds all day, and having the energy to get on my bike and work out, or to walk my dog, or go on a little hike. I look forward to stuff like that, as opposed to dreading the thought of, I have to work out because it'll make me feel better, or I have to take my dog for a walk because she has to go out. You know, I mean, I just look forward to the things that I didn't look forward to before. And that's everything. I mean, even getting up and going to work and having to, those 4-year-olds will ask you for anything, no matter how you're feeling. You know, they need you. And to be okay to give them what they need is just a world of a difference too. Work is so much easier. And
that's amazing.
It's awesome.
I mean, just that shift in perspective, like, is everything, right? Like, going from dreading and bearing and grinning and bearing it and getting through it to like living your life with like hope and happiness and energy. And like, it's 180 degree difference, right?
It is. It is. If not more, because, you know, life is something to be celebrated. And when you wake up every day wondering if you're going to be in pain that day, I mean, that takes a lot out of you mentally too. And my poor husband, like I said 100 times already, he has been there for me through it all and has never once been upset with me for it.
Mm-hmm.
He's always if you don't feel good, then rest. Your body needs rest. Or if we can't go out, then we can't go out. And I can't imagine, some people might not have that support. And that's got to be hard.
Yeah. How did, when you were in the throes of like the multiple surgeries and the constant pain, how did that impact your relationship with him, your family relationships, friendships?
With him, I mean, it really honestly made us stronger. We became a lot closer because, I mean, he was the one that he would make all of my appointments for me because he knew I was mentally spent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has done everything for me when it came to that. So it actually made us a lot closer because he wanted me to get the help that I needed.
Yeah.
And as far as my family and my friends, to be completely honest, I didn't show a whole lot to them because I still would just, Christmas, Brennan Barrett, you have to go. I mean, no matter how you feel, like if you're sick, you have to go. Or if family from out of town came in, or if I needed to go to dinner with a friend that I had promised weeks before, you just have to do it. I mean, that was my mindset.
Yeah.
So it never really, the only time I really allowed myself to step back was when I was recovering from surgery.
From any of the surgeries?
From any of the surgeries, yes. I would give myself a couple of weeks to really just heal and let people know I can't do much right now.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think it's such a common experience to hopefully have one or a couple people that you feel really comfortable sharing like everything with. Like mm-hmm. It sounds like you were with your husband.
Yes.
And then it's also really common to put on a mask. Like it's kind of how I talk about it with some of my clients. Like, you're not always comfortable talking about it with everybody, or you don't know how much to share. It takes a lot of energy to think about who you're comfortable sharing with and how much you're comfortable sharing with them. And I think sometimes when you're kind of just in survival mode, even that is sort of beyond your capacity.
It is, yeah. I think going through all of this now, I mean, I don't mind sharing with anybody, especially if they ask. I mean, it is what it is now. I've been through a lot of it. I'm okay sharing. But then it was like we said earlier, no one knows. On the outside, you look fine. You don't look sick. And so it's almost like, not that family and friends didn't believe me, but it was like, well, every woman goes through this. Every woman has a period. It's just your hormones. It's just this. It's just that. And so you do kind of think, well, okay, I guess I do have to go through with this, or I do have to just show up and be happy and pretend that it's okay. And then when I get home, I'm able to just break and
take off the mask,
curl up in bed. And yes, exactly.
Yeah. It's so tricky because, yeah, it's like you either have to do what you're saying, like sort of realize they're not going to get it and just get through it. Or on the other hand, you can decide like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be more authentic to myself. Even in those moments, I'm going to try to explain to people what's going on. But that takes an immense amount of thought and energy and time and conversations. And even then, they're not going to fully get it. But it's just fascinating to me. I was talking to someone a couple of weeks ago who said, I asked her like if she could wave a magic wand. Obviously, we can't just wave a magic wand and get rid of endo, but like if she could wave a magic wand, what would she want? And it was so interesting. She didn't say like, I don't want to be in pain. She didn't say, I want to be able to do X, Y, and Z that I can't do. She said like, the number one thing I want is to be able to communicate with the people in my life, like how much this is affecting me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's powerful. I like that a lot.
I mean, but it's so hard. I mean, it's just.
Well, and because not everyone is the same, I mean, you get the unsolicited, oh, well, my sister's cousin had that.
Yeah.
My third cousin twice removed. They had that. They had endometriosis and they got pregnant, or they have endometriosis and it's not that bad.
Like, oh, it's not? Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I'm
my
thinking,
bad.
Well, okay.
I guess I'm not actually in as much pain as I think I'm in. Thanks for that. I
mean, yeah, exactly. So I think it's like, once again, it's not that people don't believe you, but you start to kind of feel like, oh, well, if it's not that bad for them, I guess it shouldn't be that bad for me. But
yeah,
inside, you know, it is. It's so much, it could be so much worse. Or, you know,
yeah.
Or maybe the person that they're speaking to is, they've got their mask on.
Exactly.
It makes it very hard.
It's a really tough thing to navigate for sure.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Have you been any more open about all this stuff with your friends or family now that you feel better? Or is it pretty much just, well, I never really talked that much about it in the first place, so it doesn't really make sense to talk about it now? Or how do you think about that?
Before my last surgery, my excision surgery, when I finally found my NAPRO, I really started opening up to not just conversation, but almost, you know, I have a lot of sisters, and saying, girls, you've got to get this stuff checked out. If you're in pain, don't take no for an answer. You know, this is what's happening to me. And so I've been more open that way. But I also think that it's more well received coming from me now, from people who know me.
Why do you think that is?
Because I've had that many surgeries, and it's like, oh, well, if a doctor sees this, then she must be, it must be legitimate. And I think now I've got that power behind me, that experience behind me.
Yeah.
And so I'm able to say, this is what it is, and it's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 1 in 10 people should not have this. I mean, or they should be helped, and they should be helped when they ask for the help.
Yeah. Not 28 years later.
Exactly. Exactly. So yes, I'm very much more open to talking about it. And some people probably don't even ask. And I'm just, hey, if you've got a wife, if you've got a spouse, if you've got a daughter, if you've got a sister, people need to know.
Yeah. And it's such a huge part of your adult life. I mean, even honestly, even your adolescent life.
Yes.
That's so natural to want to talk about it and to want to help, like you said before, like even one other person, five other people find care sooner or find better care sooner or.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely shouldn't take as long as it does. And I hate that for people. I mean, it is heartbreaking. But I'm thankful for documentaries now that are coming out. I'm thankful for these social media accounts and podcasts and people who are willing to give their experience. And because if it weren't for those people, I wouldn't be where I am.
Right.
So I'm very willing now to help anybody else.
Yeah.
Even if it's just one person.
Yeah. I truly, like, to a person, feel like that's the attitude I've heard from people who have endo. It's like, because we've all experienced that, like, it's so hard to find the information and to get the care. And it's like, how can I help someone else not have to go through that same thing?
Exactly.
And I really, it's something I really appreciate about the community.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Yes, absolutely. I could not agree more, because yeah, I would never have found, and I didn't even know what excision was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I never would have found that if it weren't for one woman sharing her,
yeah,
her story.
Right. What's one thing you think, I would like to ask people this, like, could change the medical field around this topic?
Oh my gosh. Everything. I don't know. I mean, even just a doctor or a healthcare provider being open to the idea that you might know your body slightly more than they do, whether they're the professionals or not, and listening.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, that was what I experienced most. And it's not that I had bad doctors, but I just wanted them to listen to me more and then to just, refer me.
That's, I was thinking about what you said earlier about referrals. Like, it almost sounds like, too, in addition to listening, like, just more of an understanding of, like, if you can't do something, who might be able to?
Exactly.
That would be so helpful.
Instead of putting people through multiple surgeries. I would have loved to have just gone through one. If I had found my surgeon 3 years ago, could have been a little bit easier. But my experience, like I said, could possibly help someone else's. And I feel like that's what we're here for. So
that's a really lovely way to look at everything that you've been through.
Yeah. There's no other way to look at it at this point. It's either cry, laugh, or
yeah,
help someone out. So
yeah. You talked at the beginning about how your husband and you have been trying to build a family. How is that mm-hmm. journey going now after post-excision?
So post-excision, well, first of all, our surgeon, I mean, he's very, very, very good surgeon, very confident surgeon. About probably 2 weeks after, was like, okay, you guys can start trying now. And I was like,
2 weeks?
No.
Not quite.
No. Not going to happen, but thank you.
That's funny.
And to be completely honest, I mean, we're still not trying, mm-hmm. but I've never felt good like this before. And so we're kind of just enjoying each other and all the things. Like, I'm a pretty healthy eater, but I mean, we're indulging and foods aren't triggering me. It's been so nice to feel this way that we've kind of put a hold on worrying about it, if that makes any sense.
It makes complete sense.
It's been a very big part of our lives for the past couple of years, and it's really broken us. I mean, it's made us very close, I will say that.
Yeah.
But it has broken us in different ways. It hurts me in one way and it hurts him in another.
Yeah.
But right now, being able to just enjoy life and not dread the next day or my next flare has been so awesome. So we're just kind of living life right now. And I know we're not getting any younger, and that's what doctors will tell me. He just turned 39 and I'll be 39, you know, this year. But I mean, like I said, I also said at the beginning, my mom was in her 40s when she gave birth to my youngest brother. And while she's obviously much more fertile than me, it still gives me that little bit of hope. We got married a little later anyways, so we always figured we'd be older parents. So that doesn't bother us, but it's been nice to just enjoy our life right now. No pregnancy yet, but we have endometriosis out of the way. We've got tumors and fibroids out of the way, and we're just kind of playing it by ear, working with doctors slowly. Mm-hmm. It's much less stress that way.
Yeah. You see, it's funny. Like, I can hear in your voice both sort of, I mean, there's like joy, and also just, it sounds like a total weight lifted. Like,
it is. And what's weird is, you know, I wanted this excision. Well, my husband wanted it for me because he kept saying, Maggie, if we get nothing, if we don't get a baby out of this, your life will change no matter what. You're going to feel better. We have to have this surgery. And he always says we. I mean, it's his surgery. You know, he's, like I said, he is there for me 110%.
Yeah.
And having the surgery, I would see these women, oh, I had excision surgery and 4 months later I was pregnant. So that was like my hope. You know, I hoped for that. But having the surgery and recovering and feeling as good as I do now. And it's not that I don't want a family. I mean, I want that more than anything, but it is, it's almost like even part of that weight was lifted.
Yeah.
Because even if it doesn't happen, I can kind of say that I've done everything that I possibly could.
Yeah.
And now I feel good physically as well.
Yeah.
And I can give my all to him and my family. I can give so much more of myself and say yes to things.
Also to yourself, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I kind of love, honestly, that, I mean, I hear you loud and clear that you guys still want a family, and that's great. And I hear you, I love that you're kind of like, yeah, but like, I've never felt like this before. I kind of just want to have fun. I kind of just want to live. I kind of just want to spend time with the person I love, like, that's less stressful, and we can just enjoy each other, and I can enjoy like the energy. I don't know. I love that you're doing that and taking this time to just sort of be
me.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
I feel like me, and I've never felt like, you know, it's almost like I kind of never knew who I was in the weird, corny way. And now I'm like, oh, this is me. This is who I am and who I'm supposed to be. And yeah, I mean, we still definitely want a baby, but like you said, a big weight has been lifted off of me already because I did the biggest step I could possibly do. So
yeah, it's not corny at all. I very much relate to the like, oh, I like totally lost myself for a while there. Like, yeah. It's just, you kind of, I mean, it's normal when you're going through so much pain and you have to spend so much of your time and energy and effort and mental space on being in pain and being sick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there, you can't really be like your full self sometimes.
You can't. Well, even, I mean, asking me to tell a little about myself. Well, the longest time, that's what I was. I was endometriosis. I was sick. I was hurting. I was in pain.
Right.
And that was a lot of my life.
Right.
I mean, and it always will be. It was a big part of it. It consumed a lot of my life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how can that not be a part of you?
Yeah. I think it's so beautiful, though, to be able to have a time, and I hope for you that it's a long, long, long time, that you can sort of like re-find yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that that's really important for people who have diseases that can't be cured, right? To like have those moments and those periods and those years of like, oh, I'm back, you know?
Yes.
I think it's good to hold on to that. And if ever you're in a tough spot again, which probably will happen for most of us.
Of course.
You can kind of hold on to like, okay, but like, I know who I am and I'll find it. I'll be there again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love that. I agree with that 100%.
What's one thing that you wish you had known, like way back when you were in middle school or high school, that would have made a difference for you?
That what I was feeling was not normal, that the pain was not normal, that the periods weren't normal, that the exhaustion wasn't normal, because I think I would have pushed my mom to help me a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just thinking that it was all okay and maybe one day I'd grow out of it, or the usual, oh, well, when you have a baby, you'll feel better afterwards.
Yeah.
I just wish that I had known that it was not normal, because I even felt like that into my 20s. I mean, even when we got married, and that was my normal. And I wished I had known that that was not normal.
What would you say to anyone else dealing with a similar situation as you were then?
To reach out and to really talk to people and ask questions, ask as many questions as you can, and to not stop until you are happy with the answer that you've received.
Well, I am so happy to have heard about your story and to have gotten to know you a little bit. It's really lovely. I'm so glad that you're in a good place right now. And I hope you and your husband and your family and your friends can really just sort of be in this moment for as long as possible.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for having me on here. This was such a cool experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad to have had you.
Thank you.
Hi there. I hope you really enjoyed Maggie's story. I hope you found it interesting and inspiring. I have said before, and I really mean that, I never want to perpetuate the myth of magical cures for people with chronic illness. But at the same time, I think it's so important for us to hear from people who are currently thriving, especially after they've had such a difficult and long struggle. So anyways, I hope you found some inspiration in her story. I certainly did. If you want to learn more about me or about coaching, you can email me at katie@reviveandthrivecoach.com. You can check out my website, www.reviveandthrivecoach.com, or you can find me on Instagram @reviveandthrivecoaching. Have a great day. See you next time.